Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Robert. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Robert.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up the small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a clear set of directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening we are discussing step two, and I'll read the first paragraph on page 45, and then the panel will share a few minutes each on the reading. If I have a preference, who goes first?
I think I've been chosen to do that.
Step two, page 45 on the paragraph beginning in the preceding chapters. Step two is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought that we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, We could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem.
Crystal.
Sweet. Hello, everybody. My name is Crystal Carroll, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Crystal.
I would like to thank you guys for asking me to be here. It is truly a pleasure and a duty to come and serve here at Alcoholics Anonymous at the Simple Actions Group. I do have a home group that is the Big Book Topic Group. We meet on Fridays at 7 p.m. over in Hampton at the First Presbyterian Church over there on Victoria Boulevard and Armistead Avenue. And we also have a beginner's meeting at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays. I have a sponsor. I have walked through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with that sponsor, and my sobriety date is August 9th of 2009. So that was a lot. And I know in the beginning when I was reading through this stuff with my sponsor, we would take it like sentence by sentence. And we would, you know, I would just get lost in the sound of her voice while she was just reading, and I couldn't remember the questions that I had for her. And of course, I thought I was stupid, so I really didn't want to ever ask the questions that I had for her. But what this looked like is when we sat down and we read the beginning of We Agnostics, I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I hated God. or the idea that had been planted in my life from, you know, growing up. My family, you know, they were all Roman Catholics, and it was all very, pretty, you know, but I never felt accepted there. I never felt like I was one of. So I would go with all different friends, you know, to church, to Southern Baptist churches, to Presbyterian churches, to Episcopalian churches. Wherever my friends were going is where I went. And I felt like everybody was looking at me. A friend of mine was talking before the meeting that he had taken up jogging, and that he feels like as he's jogging, everybody's staring at him as he's running down the road, you know, and that's exactly what I felt like when I walked into a church, like it was gonna burn down if I stayed there for too long. Seriously, I really thought I was, you know, either I was going to burst into flames or the building was. So, you know, it tells me I have these two things, that I can quit entirely or have little control over the amount I take. And it says or. And, you know, it was explained to me that that is what could help me decide whether I was an alcoholic or not. If I had one or the other, that I was probably an alcoholic. Well, I had both, you know, because I could not, even when I honestly wanted to, I could not quit entirely. And I had no control over the amount that I drank or took or smoked or anything. And I know we're dealing with alcoholism here, but those things were just, if you put it in my face, I was gonna do it. If you didn't know what it did, I would find out for you. And that was really exciting for me, because anything that would change the way I felt about me was what I wanted to do, because I didn't want to be me. I hated me. I hated who I was. I hated that I couldn't talk to another human being without feeling stupid and just uncomfortable in my own skin at all times. I didn't fit in with my family, even though they were raging alcoholics and drug addicts. It was awesome. I mean, I grew up thinking that smoking pot and snorting cocaine and drinking beer was what you did. You know, we would get together, everybody would pass out. It was awesome, you know, and it was fun. And people would run over, you know, my uncles were great because, I mean, it's like normal for like them to go outside and get into a fist fight, or one of them would hop in a car and run the other one over. And I mean, these were normal happenings in my family. So when I saw something normal, you know, and most of my friends had Christian parents, Most of my friends went to church. And they were like, you don't go to church? I'm like, no, my mom doesn't make me, but she lets me go with you if you'll let me go. And the great thing about that is I knew, and I know I'm skipping around a lot, but I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt when I read this paragraph that I was an alcoholic. I knew beforehand. I knew the powerless and insanity of alcoholism before I quit drinking. I knew that I was an alcoholic. I didn't want to admit it, but I knew. And the alcoholic death looked really good to me because spiritual basis was like, screw that crap. You know, I don't want to have anything to do with it. But that alcoholic death, I knew it would take a really long time and I could probably have a lot of fun in the meantime because drinking was fun for me for a really long time. And the thing about it was at the end of my drinking this time around, I was sitting in a recliner after a night out on the town, and I had gotten kicked out of the bar we were at. I ended up waking up in a bed with a guy that I barely knew, you know, because that's what I did. I would invite chaos into my life, and I was fortunate enough that he was kind, and he took me to my car because I didn't know where that was. And I go home, and my ex-husband brings my children to the house because it was my week, you know, and Sunday was the day that we switched or exchanged. The girls would come back to my house or they would go to his. And I'm sitting in this chair thinking of creative ways to kill myself, and he walks in with my girls. And I'm in tears, you know, I want to die. And my girls are like, what are you doing? Where have you been? And they're like all over me, and I couldn't say a word. I couldn't say anything. And I looked at him and I said, can you just take them away, please? And I sat in that chair and I just knew that the best course of action for those girls was for me to not be in their life. I knew that because I knew that I was never going to get any better, and I knew things were never going to be any different. And I knew that. And it was a place in my heart that just told me that that was the truth. And you know, so I have this bright idea. Something just pops into my head. Well, why don't you call your sponsor? So I did that. And she's like, and you know, I'm telling her, oh, I hate myself. I want to die. And she's like, okay, well, let's meet at my house next Tuesday. Do you think you can not drink until then? She's like, if you want to drink, just give me a call. She's like, if you want to drink, go to a meeting. And I didn't drink. And I ended up meeting with her. And we went back. And what I realized was that whole time that I love this sentence, this our human resources as marshaled by the will were not sufficient, they failed utterly. And I failed utterly at life all the time. All the time. I suck at life. And lack of power is my dilemma. And my second favorite sentence in the big book, obviously. It's so fantastic. It's like the best one-word sentence ever. And so it tells me that I have to find this power greater than myself. Right, and I didn't know what that was supposed to look like. I didn't want to believe in what everybody else believed in because I was unique and different. And I was told I didn't have to. And that was like a new idea. I mean, I had heard it before, but that time, the way she said it to me was the time that I heard it. And questions were just flooding into my head, but of course, I couldn't ask those questions because I was scared to death. I was scared to death of what that might mean, what I might have to do. And I didn't want to do any of this stuff. I just wanted somebody to do it for me. I wanted somebody to show me how to drink successfully. And I thought that, you know, my sponsor would do that for me. And my second sponsor is not that kind of woman. She wants me to have my own experience. And I'm like, but I'd rather have yours. Because it's already working for you. So then she reads this paragraph that that's exactly what this book is about. You know, and it says its main object is to enable me to find a power greater than myself which will solve my problem. And the problem isn't that I drink. The problem is that I don't know how to live and do anything without drinking. And once I realized that, and I was convinced after my last time out drinking, and then she reads the rest of this paragraph, and I zoned out. I totally didn't want to hear about any of that because it was just too much information. And Because that last sentence, but his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or ignored entirely. And I really thought I was going to be able to get through this thing without having to do any of that spiritual shit. I really did. And that just wasn't the case. And what happened was that I came to believe, because I never really thought myself to be sane, and I still don't really believe myself to be sane. But what I do know today is that I have been granted sanity in any specific experience that I have, because God provides me with whatever I need whenever the circumstances arise. And, you know, there I spend a lot of time in insanity, but I also get the awesome experience of knowing what sane thinking looks like, knowing what peace and serenity looks like, just because I was willing to do something different. And the only reason I was willing to do something different was because what I was doing was not working. And I had tried everything I could possibly muster in my brain. And that was a lot. I mean, a lot. And once all of those things had failed, I had no choice. I had no choice. I was done. And I threw my hands up in the air and I said, all right, I don't know what this is going to look like and I'm scared to death, so could you make me feel better? And what happened was that I gained just enough peace to give me hope. My mind didn't stop racing, my life didn't immediately get better, but I gained just enough peace to grasp onto a shred of hope. And I believed that it was working in my sponsor's life, and she asked me to believe that she believed. And that really worked for me, because I didn't know what to believe in. I didn't know what this thing was gonna do for me or what it looked like. And I've been hearing a lot lately that if I would have written a list of things that my life was gonna look like after I got sober at 5 years of sobriety, that I totally would have discounted myself. I totally would have discounted the satisfactory life that I'm living, satisfactory, imperfect life that I'm living today. Thanks.
Wow. Thanks for sharing. My name is Ed. I'm an alcoholic. I have a home group. My home group is Joys of Recovery. We meet on Thursday night. It's a big book. And I'm also grateful to be here tonight. Wow, you really touched a lot on, the first paragraph there. It talks about, it's basically a recap of step one. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. You know, there's the obsession. And then it talks about if you have little control over the amount you take, there's the allergy. Boom, step one. And I kind of learned that. I listened to some Jill and Charlie tapes, and that's how they break it down, you know. It's two questions. He goes, now we have pamphlets that are 44 questions, you know. But two simple questions, you know. I have the obsession to drink, and when I take that first drink, I'm not going to stop, you know. So, and my life looked like that. I looked like an alcoholic when I got here. It was really easy for me and my sponsor to say, hey, you know, these are the things you've been doing. I think you may be alcoholic. So step one didn't take a whole lot of time for this alcoholic anyway. You know, I didn't need a whole lot of proving. But it says, but I didn't want to be the hopeless variety that it talks about in paragraph two. And, but I was. I came to find out that I was. And, the next paragraph, it says, hoping against hope, we were not true alcoholics. And that was the last 2 years of my drinking. Because I kind of knew I was an alcoholic, but I was hoping against all hope that I wasn't. So I tried different stuff. You know, not drinking during the week, I couldn't do it. I just could not do it. So I said, well, maybe if my life doesn't get so unmanageable, I can drink every day. There's a lot of people that drink every day, you know? So, that are fun. I called them functional alcoholics, and I used to share that at the bar all the time. I'm a functional alcoholic. And I was functional all the way up till the time I landed in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I lost my job, and my wife was ready to leave me. I had put the family $20,000 in debt on cocaine. And these are the things that I did. That was the unmanageability. That was step one stuff. And that's the hopeless of variety, because I knew what I was doing.
I knew, and I was brought up, I knew right from wrong, but I could not do right. I just could not do it. And I could not put the drink down. I could not do it. You know, happy, sad, it didn't matter. I couldn't do it. And when I kind of was getting ready to lose my job about 2 months before, you know, it was coming. And my wife had found the checkbooks and stuff. You know, I was doing some of that creative financing, you know, second mortgages and credit cards here she don't know about, you know, stuff like that. And when she finally found that stuff up, I was like, okay, the gig is up, but I'm not ready to quit drinking yet. So I says, I think I'm depressed. You know, so I think I'll go see a psychiatrist. You know, that's what I'm protecting this alcohol. I'm protecting it at all costs, you know. And so I get to the psychiatrist, and he said, well, how much do you drink? A couple here and there, you know. I could not get honest, you know. And so he prescribed me some funny stuff, and, you know, I'm taking them plus drinking stuff. So, I mean, I'm, you know, at the end, I was suicidal, homicidal, you name it. I just didn't want to go on, you know. And what a blessing. God stepped in right there, because I lost my job. And that's the kick in the butt this alcoholic needed, you know. And boy, what a relief, though. I mean, it was like a relief that I could come completely clean with my wife, with the people. I mean, that Dr. Jekyll, I mean, that was a relief. But I still didn't know how to stop drinking. I still didn't know how to stop living this way. So the day I lost my job, my wife went back to work. She had to work. She went with me. And all I knew what to do was drink. So I sat in my home by myself. I had no beer. I was a beer drinker, but I had no beer. And so I found a bottle of something underneath the Seagram's or something underneath the sink. And I didn't have nothing to mix it with. I couldn't drink it straight. So I mixed it with Kool-Aid, grape Kool-Aid. Nice. So that was my last drunk. And it didn't work, you know, because I wasn't getting drunk, because I had the squirrel cage was going. And I get a knock on my door at about noon. And this had been, I had been drinking a couple hours, and it's a guy from work that I used to party with a long time ago, and he was 10 years sober now. And he knocks on my door, and he hands me a meeting list, man, and he saved my life. You know, he says, look, don't do this to get your job back. Don't do this for your wife or your kid or anything. He said, do this for yourself. And so I took that meeting list, and that night I went to my very first meeting. And again, that's where, like I said, there's just so many God coincidences is what we call them in the rooms. I got to this meeting, and they usually had patients there on a Thursday night, and the patients didn't show up that night. So it's all these people with recovery and me. Newcomer, my first meeting. And the format was everybody shared their story, how they got there, what happened, kind of like I'm doing here. And by the time it got to me, I'm in tears, man, because, man, that's me. I think like that. I drink like that. And I feel like that. I felt like that. And I got that hope, because they were sober now. You know, and they were laughing. I watched them laugh before the meeting. Who's laughing? This ain't funny, dude. This is not funny, you know? I'm in some deep kinship here, and you're laughing and having a good time, and I didn't want no part of it. but anyway, you know, my sponsor, when we got to step two and we were reading this stuff, you know, on step one, he had me write down five things that I did that I wasn't proud of when I was drinking, okay? And then step two, he had me write down five things I did when I was not drinking that I wasn't proud of. And he says, what's the difference, dude? And basically what he was saying is, which will solve your problem. So here I was thinking my problem was the drinking. And really it was the thinking and the acting, the way I was acting. And so I wanted with all my might to act better. But I just couldn't, because I've tried. I tried the last 2 years. I tried, and I just couldn't. And because it says it right here, our human resources as marshaled by the will were not sufficient. I didn't have it, dude. I did not have the power to stay sober. And I wrote a couple definitions down here. You know, the definition of sanity is of sound mind, Okay, so insanity is not a sound mind, and I fit that description. And anyway, I'll pass with that.
Awesome, thanks, Ed.
Thanks. Page 46, much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect contact with Him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek Him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It's open, we believe, to all men.
Thanks. Oh, man. That screams tradition three to me, you know. Our only requirement here is a desire to stop drinking. I don't want to touch this thing. It'll fall. Yeah. I'm like my kid, man. I touch it, it becomes destroyed. What tradition three, right? Only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. It doesn't say I have to stop drinking to come here. It just says I have to have a desire, right? And so I had a desire to know a power greater than myself. I don't know where it came from. I don't know how it got there, but I had a desire to know something other than the craziness that was my life. And I could see it in my sponsor because she would invite me into her home. I'm a thief and a liar and a cheat, and she invites me into her home with her husband and her child and feeds me and treats me like a normal human being. And this thing was working for her. She never asked anything from me, ever, except to sit with her and to try to be as honest as I could be at any given moment. And I was not good at being honest at all. And I really love what you said, you know, trying to be good. Oh my God, I thought, I think that I can act my way into right thinking all the time. Still, I think that if I just act good enough, that everybody will be fooled, even myself, because I'm so good at believing what my delusional mind tells me. And the really cool thing about this, you know, and I know that we read a certain paragraph, but in the paragraph before, it says, let us make haste to reassure you. These people, I mean, they wanted us to get this, the people that wrote this book. They wanted us to get it, and they wanted to tell us quickly that the only thing that we had to do, there were two things, lay aside prejudice and express a willingness to believe. And that's all we had to do to make a beginning. That's it. And I had a lot of prejudice against religious organizations and religious people and spiritual principles. Because, of course, I thought they were all, you know, see, I'm telling you people. I thought they were all hypocrites. But look at me. You know, I'm living a life of dishonesty, but I was never looking at me. Of course, I wanted to look at everybody else because I never wanted to take a look at me. That was hard. But I could tell you the truth about you in a heartbeat. And so the sentence that really stuck out, well, part of the sentence is, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. So I didn't have to understand God, because I thought there were, in you know, as we understood Him, I thought that meant I had to understand God before I could know God. And I tripped over that a lot, because I thought that it was supposed to happen all at once. I thought that if I didn't know God, I couldn't live these spiritual principles, that I had to act right, and I couldn't act right. I still can't act right. And you know, I have a great understanding of what I believe my God to look like today, you know, and I try to practice these principles in my life, and I still can't act right. And today I don't have to. Because maybe it's exactly the way I'm supposed to be acting. Who am I to say I'm supposed to act a certain way and not act a certain way? There are certain principles that I have to live by today. And if I'm living by those principles, what I think my life looks like doesn't matter. And that's what this taught me, this paragraph. Much to my relief, I didn't have to consider anybody else's conception. You know, God started off for me as two alcoholics meeting and sharing with one another. The energy that I felt, the way I felt when I met with my sponsor, nothing in the world could go wrong in that amount of time. However long it was, it could have been an hour, it could have been 15 minutes, but when I was with her, she was just powerful. She lived and practiced these, lives and practices this stuff to the best of her ability. And then she screws up and she would share that with me too. And that is where I learned that this isn't about. I didn't learn about it being not perfection, but just progress. I learned that through watching my sponsor show me that she made mistakes too, and that all we had to do was keep trying to practice this stuff. And you know, the most amazing thing about this is this whole broad and roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive. You know, I learned that from my home group. My home group, you know, this group of quirky drunks, you know, that told my story a million times. And all they do is they taught me how to be welcoming to everybody. They taught me how to offer a hand and a smile, because that's what they did for me. And it made me feel welcome and a part of, and it made me feel better than I had ever felt before. And that is where God was for me. That is what God looks like for me today, even. You know, when I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or I walk into a grocery store and see a random rogue alcoholic in the grocery store, and we get to smile at each other, and we get to hug, and we get to say, hey, it is so great to see you. That is God. And it just, I mean, it just shines, man. There are people in these rooms that just shine. And it is so magical. And I, you know, it's like all fluffy and feel good and shit, but the great thing about it is that it really is fluffy and feel good. It really is a majority of the time for me today, because of the fact that I didn't have to stay rigid. You know, the black and white that I came in here with turned to a lot of gray. And what works for me works for me. And if it doesn't work for you, that's all right. I hope you find something that works for you. And that's exactly what my sponsor did for me. She's like, you don't have to believe what I believe. You just have to believe. And I really like that concept. It's amazing. And it's what helps me to stay here. And it's what helps me to grow on a spiritual basis today. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Well, I did, because my conception of God when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous was not good. I had that I'm going to hell God, okay? And the way I had been living for basically since I was a young boy, that's where I was headed. You know, and that was the God of my understanding, was the condemning God. And I needed to find a different God. And I did that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I grabbed on to all everyone's God in AA meetings, you know. I really did like the loving God, the forgiving God. I needed that God to get me sober. Because I came in here with a lot of shame, a lot of remorse, a lot of guilt. And I didn't love myself, so there was no way this God of the universe or whatever was going to love me with the things I've been doing, you know, the way I've been living, the way I've been treating people, and that's what I did. I grabbed on, and for me it was piecemeal, you know. For me it was my sponsor became my higher power, because man, every time I talked to him and every time we go to a meeting, I was feeling better. You know, things were getting better. And he did something for me. He told me, you know, and this is where I found out there is a God and I'm not him. Okay, this is step two is where I figured that out. And he told me to leave a bunch of this crap alone that I was struggling with. Because every time I touched something, it would go to crap. Okay, and that was that's what happened. And he told me to leave his stuff alone because I needed a job now. Okay. I needed my wife to love me again, you know. I didn't need her to leave because I didn't have nothing, you know. You know, I needed all these things. I needed. That's the God I wanted. I wanted the God that can give me all these things back, yeah. You know. That's the God I wanted. But anyway, he told me, leave all that stuff alone and dive into this book and these steps. And I promise you, that at the end of it, if things will work out. And they did. I stopped touching things. I stopped getting involved with that stuff. And I got involved. I jumped into Alcoholics Anonymous, man. He told me I better get a home group, okay? He told me I better get two service commitments, you know? And this is a funny story. When he told me to get two service commitments, I didn't have a home group yet, so I went to this group that I had been going to all the time, and I said, hey, man, I need a commitment or my sponsor's going to fire me. You know, so they say, hey, man, you can make coffee next month. So all next month, man, I made coffee every day. So when I was finished with that month, I went back to my sponsor. I said, hey, man, I'm done. You know, I did my service. He goes, no, you misunderstood. You got to have a service commitment all the time. Oh, crap, man, this AA is tough, you know. But anyway, I think, you know, but you know what I think? I think this is where I found God in coffee. And making coffee, because I was at the meetings 30 minutes early, man, and people would come, and I would talk to them, you know, and I would get their hope, and I would see how God's working in their life, and, well, maybe, you know, just maybe this can work for me, you know, and we talk about the actions and the thinking, and for me, it does take me to change my actions before I can change my mind, before my thinking changes, and that's how it's been for me. In Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I have to go to meetings, you know, and hear the solution, you know, because one of my sponsor's favorite things was, you're suffering from untreated alcoholism, and the treatment I get is in this book, with good sponsorship and going to meetings and sharing it, and that I had to learn that, you know, getting honest was a spiritual experience for me because I had never been honest in my life. I was so scared people would figure out who I really am before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's a scary proposition because you didn't want to know who I really was. I didn't like them. I wasn't sharing them with no one, you know. And you know, but it says here that we found God does not make too hard turns with those who seek Him. So that's all I got to do is I got to seek Him. And how do I do that? I come into AA, and because God works through people, man, and He works through this program. God is in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I didn't need to go to church. Whew, that was a relief, because I didn't want no part of that. And, you know, it's funny because I tried that. You know, when I first got married, I had to take, me and my wife were living, me and my fiance, who's now my wife, we were living together. So we went and we got to take these marriage count stuff. And the preacher said, well, you're going to have to separate why we do this. I said, yeah, that, no problem. And, you know, I'm diving in, man. My wife, you know, she's all about church. And so, hey, you know, that's what I did. You know, whatever everybody else was into, I was into it too, you know. Yeah, I can do this, you know. But the God there was so wanting. It was like so wanting. You know, I got to go to church every Sunday. Really? You know, that interrupt, you know, I want to start drinking at 10, the football starts at 1, you know. And that was just my thinking back then, you know. So anyway, now I'll pass with that.
That was awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Page 47. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
That is not a short question. It is not a short question. It might not have a lot of words in it, but it's not a short question. And that's what I said to my sponsor, because, you know, my sponsor was the kind of woman that if the book asks us a question, we answer the question. If it tells us to write, we write. If it tells us to pray, we pray. Yada, yada, yada. So when we got to this question, she asked me this question. She said, Crystal, do you now believe, or are you even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than yourself? And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, can you pray for the willingness? And I said, I guess. And then I had an experience, right? So what this story looked like was that I knew, and this was in the very beginning of coming back into the rooms, I knew things that I had messed up my first 3.5 years of sobriety, right? I knew that I hadn't allowed people in the fellowship to get to know me, and I knew that I had not been of service. I did not keep that service. I would too was, oh, well, I'm done with that. Service check, you know, and it was like a week's worth of this, whatever that happened to be. And I dove head in to making friends in the rooms. I gave everybody my number. I was like, call me all the time. I am available whenever, because I didn't have a job and I wasn't doing very good at being a mother, and, you know, I had a lot of free time on my hands, and I too had all these things that I needed, and my sponsor had told me to leave those alone and concentrate on getting sober. And I didn't believe a word that woman said, because she said, you don't need a job, you need to get sober. Well, she didn't actually say that, because she said that she didn't know what I needed. But she said that I might want to try to concentrate on getting sober. So I make friends with this guy, right? And I'm jobless and I don't have a car. And he's like, oh, come pick you up and I will take you to job interviews and I will take you to pay your bills and I'll take you grocery shopping. So he comes over one day and he takes me on a Sunday to drop off some job applications and pay a couple bills and pick up some stuff from the grocery store. And he treated me to lunch. And, you know, I'm still kind of uncomfortable about people treating me for shit. And what happened was we had a great day and he brought me home and I left. That evening, a woman called me who was also in the program and offered me a job. Then my sponsor called and said, can you meet me at a meeting tomorrow night? And I said, yes. And then Sunday, I'm home cleaning my house, or, you know, Monday morning, I'm home cleaning my house because I got to start work on Tuesday. And this guy shows up at my back door. Knock, knock, knock. Get ready, we're going to a meeting. I was like, no, I'm not going to a meeting. I'm cleaning my house. I'm in my pajamas. And I'm not ready to go. And the meeting starts in a half an hour. And my sponsor had a meeting tonight. And he's like, no, get ready, we're going to a meeting. And I said, no, I'm not going to a meeting. And then he proceeds to get very ugly and try to force his way into my home. And the old Crystal Carol came rushing forth, and I grabbed the knife off of the counter and I shoved the door shut in his house, or in his face. And I said, if you don't leave my house, I'm either going to stab you if you get close enough, or I'm going to call the cops. So he walks off yelling. My neighbors are all outside. It's fantastic. And so I go into my room and I got a phone in one hand and I'm calling my sponsor and I'm calling another person in the program and then I'm calling another person in the program and nobody's answering the phone. I'm making phone calls with one hand, put my clothes on with the other in the middle of my house. I'm ready to go because I'm going to that meeting and I'm going to show that guy that I'm not scared of him and that he can't threaten me and my children in my own home. I'm going to this meeting and I'm going to tell him that in front of everybody so that everybody knows what a jerk he is. And I'm on the phone the whole time trying to call three people, my sponsor and two other people in the program. And I got dressed and I'm still calling people. And I walk out and I get in my car and I head on the way to that meeting, which was like 20 minutes away from my house. And I'm still calling and nobody is answering the phone. So I threw down the phone and I said, I guess it must be God's will for me to go tell this guy a piece of my mind. So I race there and I get into the parking lot and the phone rings. And it's my sponsor. And I'm livid. And I'm telling her all this stuff and what had happened and telling her the whole story and what I'm going to do. And I'm going to show him that I'm not a doormat and this and that and the other. And she says, so what you're telling me is you're going to walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where there are sick and suffering alcoholics and make an ass out of yourself and show them that crazy people live here. So what's going to happen is that sick and suffering alcoholic that may be sitting in that room is going to never come back to Alcoholics Anonymous and could potentially die because you want to prove a point. And of course, this is that epitable needle in my balloon, and it kind of just deflated, and I turned my car around in the parking lot and I went home. But that was the first example in my sobriety that there was a God, because I was able to see from a different perspective. I was able to recognize my own really crazy, chaotic, insane behavior for the first time, ever. And I didn't go into that meeting. And I was able to not tell the whole world what this guy had done, because that's what I really wanted to do. And I am able to look that guy in the face today, and we're able to be friends, all because I was able to set aside my anger and resentment for just a moment and turn my car around. And that is what God looks like in my life. He shows up at the very last freaking minute and says, hold up a minute. I'm here. I got the answer. Don't do that, because you're crazy. And that... those are the kind of experiences that happened in my life to prove to me that there was a power greater than myself, because I need to be hit in the head with a 2x4. Thanks.
Thanks. So we needed to ask ourselves the one short question, do I now believe, or I'm even willing to believe? And there's that word willing. And for me, pain and willingness are hand in hand. You know, the more pain I'm in, the more willing I become. And that's why this is step two, because I was still hurting. I was still in a lot of pain. Life wasn't quite manageable yet. So I was willing. I was willing to do whatever it took. Am I willing to believe? Yeah, I'm willing. I'm willing to believe. Because, and you know how I was willing to believe was going to the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and seeing the miracles happen. And seeing this God of other people's understanding working in their life, you know? And I said, man, I really want that. So I'm willing to believe maybe it'll work, you know? Maybe if I continue on and do this deal, that maybe I can get better too. Maybe I won't start, keep acting like I'm acting, you know? So willing, you know, and for me, between steps two and three, I don't know when it happened. I can't say the day or whatever, but that's when the obsession for me left. I no longer had the obsession to drink anymore. I had the obsession to live, and I think that came with you know, you hear 90 and 90, but I do believe it was just taking the simple action of going to a meeting every day, and sometimes twice a day because I wasn't working, you know. And hearing the solution, and you know, my sponsor, it was funny. You know, he told me not to share on a step that I hadn't done yet, because I early on when I was getting all this hope, you know, I loved to share at meetings, whether I knew what I was talking about or not, you know. So I used to go to meetings my sponsor would go to. No, I won't be going there tonight. I'm going somewhere else. I want to hear myself talk, you know. And you know what's funny is how much hope comes from the ruins of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was probably, my sobriety date is December 8th, okay, 2006. And I remember it was a couple weeks in the program. And I got a sponsor early on, very quickly. Because for some reason I heard sponsorship early on in the program. And so we're 2 weeks, I'm about 2 weeks sober, maybe three. And I'm laying in bed with my wife, and I tell her, I says, you know what? I'm going to be the best recovering alcoholic there ever was.
Yeah.
So it didn't take me long to get my pride and ego, you know, to get that ego back, you know. I'm going to be the best at this stuff, you know. And that's just the hopefulness of Alcoholics Anonymous, at least for me. That's the way it worked for me, you know. And I also shared with her, I says, you know, I'll probably be good by Christmas. Yeah, and I think I wanted to just give her a little bit of hope, you know, but not realizing that this is a lifetime deal. But anyway, that's all I got on that.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
On page 52, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. Oh, there's another one. When we saw others solve their problems by simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did.
You know, I heard in a meeting a very long time ago when I was first dipping into the Alcoholics Anonymous thing that these were the promises in reverse. You know, this is what untreated alcoholism looked like. I felt and experienced all of these things before I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I think it's very important that it's known that I also experienced these things in sobriety while in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. because there are times in my sobriety, for some reason or another, I'm not doing something. I can't ever pinpoint what that certain thing is, because of course I always think that I am the greatest alcoholic ever. I'm always praying. I'm always being helpful. You know, but the truth is that I am lacking whenever, whatever that looks like. But what starts to happen is I start to hate people. And that's the first thing. That's the first sign for me, is when I start looking at you. Because I don't want to look at me. And you are a much better choice for me to look at and judge. So that's where it starts. And then a lot of other things, even though I have a job, I can be at a point where I can't make a living. I'm miserable at my job, you know? Or I just did a fear inventory. I'm always full of fear. Because I like to protect those old ideas that I have in my head, like things of this nature. Well, it's gonna end anyway. It's gonna look like this anyway. So I might as well guard myself and protect myself against being hurt. Because that's what my head tells me, is that something that I enjoy thoroughly in my life is gonna go away anyway. So I might as well just go ahead and not even put my whole self into it. You know, and that's what these bedevilments look like in my life. And I can be praying the entire time. I can be of use to other people. I can be doing everything and practicing to the best of my ability. And these bedevilments can come upon me at any given time, because my alcoholism is waiting patiently for me just to say, F it. I'm not going to go to that meeting today, or I'm not going to call that person back because I'm famous for that, you know. I'm not going to answer that phone call. because I don't want to think about them. I want to think about me and all the issues in my life. But very quickly today, I become full of fear and pain, and I become terrified. And I'm terrified, which I've come to realize through my last fear inventory, was that I am terrified of just being, just allowing people to know me as I am, because that's who God created me to be. And I fear that because I think, just like Ed had talked about earlier, that if they know the real me, that they're gonna go away anyway, because they're not gonna put up with the crazy. They're not gonna put up with the things that come out of my mouth at any given moment. They're not gonna put up with the fact that I question everything all the time. You know, but what happens is when I do the things, when I practice the things that I've been taught here, like calling my sponsor and say, hey, my fear inventory kind of burst out of me at work and I started crying maniacally in front of my boss. And she says, oh, great, what was that about? She's like, what did he say? Because my boss, I have broken my anonymity to my boss, so my boss knows who I am, and I told him all about fear inventory because he sat down and wanted to know, what is this fear inventory all about? And I told him, and he said, that's really cool. And I was like, no, it's really not. It's really not, because now I have to take a look at me. And the thing is when I'm honest with you guys about who I am, that's when God shows up for me. That's when all of this stuff kind of flutters away. And all I have to do is show up and be what I'm supposed to be at any given moment. And I have no clue what that is, and that freaks me out on a regular basis. But most of the time nowadays, I am capable of showing up and not doing a damn anything else, just showing up. And I like that. I really like the fact that all I have to do today is show up. Because, you know, I always hear about this, God helps those who help themselves. Well, that's not true in my life. God helps me even though I can't help myself. God does for me what I can't do for myself, because I am powerless. And I know that I am powerless over my entire life. And it's when I get the idea that I have some sort of control or power that these things, these bedevilments, show up. And it takes me a little while to realize that they're there, and I treat people badly. And you know, the really cool thing about that is that God makes all that right. And I just have to be willing to show up. Thanks.
Thanks. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change. There's that word, change. And that's, I got that highlighted. Because it seems like every time we got to a step, I had to change something. You know? And it says that we're full of fear. And I was definitely full of fear. And I'm going to keep this kind of short. But it says, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work. Okay? That was proven in step one. Okay, my best thinking, my best actions landed me in the ruins of Alcoholics Anonymous. There had to be something different. Okay, so the God idea was working, and I saw that idea working. I didn't start in step two. I did not start talking about God. I wasn't God conscious during this time. You know, like I said, this step kind of gradually took hold. You know, By the time I was through my fifth step is when I came to, man. That was the real freedom of the program. That's when, God was so working in my, where I could see God working in my life. He had always been working in my life, but I could actually see the results because I got rid of all that crap that was blocking me from seeing that. So anyway, that's all I got on that.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you all for sharing your experience here. I'm going to read this fast. The seventh tradition, we're passing the basket.
The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their in-group central office, local services, district area, general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. I'll read them. The one furthest away announcement is Wednesday, June 25th. Dinner starts at 6:30 and there's a speaker at 8 at the Big Book Topic Group Friday night in Hampton. Please bring a dessert or salad to share. West Kent, am I reading that right?
It's West Kent's 34th anniversary dinner, and the speaker's from Hampton.
Yeah, that's it. West Kent, Princess Anne.
Don't go to Hampton.
Read this one while I'm reading it. Gratitude in action. Date, Saturday, June the 7th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. There's fellowship workshops, delegates report, AA Jeopardy, and a new skit. Lunch is provided. Any question? There's a flyer up here. Downtown Young and Sober has a Seeds of Growth workshop featuring four speakers and food. Bring a dish if you wish. That's this set. This Saturday, May the 17th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's in downtown Norfolk on Freemason. Any announcements? Wow.
My name's Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
My home group, Downtown Young and Sober, is having a workshop this Saturday. Did that just get said? Did it say that I ran to bring in bacon?
No. No. It did not say that I ran to bring in bacon.
Saturday, May the 17th, Downtown Young and Sober.
Hey, Javier.
This GBC Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous will be at the end of this month, May 17th. The first registration is $25. Come see me after the meeting if you have any questions.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Javier. My name is Ashley, an alcoholic.
Hey, Ashley.
I have traffic tickets for the Gratitude in Action. They're only $1. It goes to the
Thanks, Ashley.
Any more? That's it? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. Newcomers, is there anyone in our first 30 days? We'd like to welcome you if you'll holler out your first name.
Tyrone.
Hey, welcome. Whoop, whoop.
There's literature. I don't see it. Where's it at? Behind me.
I'm doing the banner for you.
Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. There's pamphlets for free, and books are a small cost. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will have two people up here to ask about sponsorship. Do we know who they are? Evan and Casey will be up here to ask about sponsorship. Closing. We would like to thank the panel for sharing their experience. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on Colonial Avenue and 22nd, right down the road in front of the church here. Anyone volunteer to read the last two paragraphs, page 164?
Get it, I'll get it. I just want to give people opportunity to do service work, man. My name's Evan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Evan.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the happy road of destiny. I always get that backwards. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you heard some warm, fuzzy stuff you want to listen to again, simpleactions.net, there's a recording of these meetings. Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you.